This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning, kia ora, and welcome to Free Left Turn here on 89.0 Independent Community Media, Free FM. Ooh, that was a bit of a creep.
My knee.
Free Left Turn is a show about left-wing perspectives.
This show, not Free FM, I guess.
No, not Free FM. Free Left Turn is a show which is based on a left-wing perspective.
I just learned, speaking of left-wing, I learned where the saying comes from. You know, because you're a historian buff. It's from the French. And when they had their assembly, this is in Louis the 14th or whatever, and you'd have the clergy, the nobility, and the so-called peasants, so the rest, and the peasants got to sit on the left, and that's the origin of the left wing.
Yep.
Is that right?
Possibly. I don't know. Without going to anything, I'm not a student of Louis the 14th,
or whatever. But I just learned that the other day, and I thought,
okay. So we know. There goes. My name is Craig. To the right of me is
Fred,
and to the right of him is
Mick.
Yes,
I consider myself left wing. I'm a social justice sort of.
Most people are, but I'd say in that space.
Yeah.
And you can find us on www.freefm.org.nz. And we also have a Facebook page at Free Left Turn and podcast. So you can find us and you can comment, you can follow us or whatever you want to do. You can abuse us if you don't like us.
I only like nice comments, and I would like bad ones. I'm very sensitive.
sensitive to a smile, whatever. Yeah.
Well, what do you know, Mick, apart from your haircut?
About
your haircut.
Well, this week was interesting because it was 80 years this week that the hostilities in Europe finished.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, VE Day.
VE Day.
Yeah,
80 years ago.
Well, I guess what I did last night for 2 hours.
Did you sit up and watch the...
I watched the victory parade. Right, from the start to the end.
Was it British? Was it Britain or France?
Russian.
It was in Russia, Moscow.
Was it going through Red Square?
You wouldn't believe it.
They going through Red Square, were they?
Or? Yeah, they had President Xi from China there. They had, I think, President Lula from Brazil was there. The President Sisi from Egypt was there. Quite a few and other world leaders.
Non-aligned people, eh?
And I'm not really a militaristic, but, that sort of how they managed to march and all that and synchronise stuff and all that.
Choreographed.
Is that what you call it? Yeah, but anyway, I watched that, so.
Were the Russians goose-tipping?
Well,
I don't know. Do they?
No one had the changing of the guards outside public buildings. They've got some army personnel. I've seen them on clips, they're goose-tipping. It's a very exaggerated goose-tipping.
Do they do that in Buckingham Palace or not?
No.
They do it. You know where the goose step is? Well, they did because they're not talking to each other at present. They're trying to maybe go to war. It's Pakistan and India at a certain border.
They do that sort of peacock stomping and marching, and all try to outdo each other.
How flamboyant
they can be.
Yeah, and it has been up until recently, probably not now, but it has been up. It's often a tourist. People go to watch the changing of the guards.
Yeah, and the Greeks do it outside Parliament. They do a slow motion goose step.
And they hold their weapons. weapon or whatever is over there over their shoulder.
It's the whole thing's in like slow motion. It's
Is that the ones with the floppy hats?
With the national dress. No,
no, they don't dance like it's all with the Greek though.
No.
Okay.
No smashing the plates.
Okay. Yeah. So watch that. But it's interesting because the West can, but actually. You know, the West has done by their actions that they're always potting China, so they've just virtually pushed Russia and China together.
And probably other nations too.
And other nations, you know, start saying they're bad. Mm. Well, the other guys say, well, you keep calling us bad. These are the only guys who actually talk to us. So you can't blame them.
So the event in Britain was full of rah 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 stuff. I saw that. Saw the snippet on the news, but the French. We're more solemn with their approach to VE Day.
And there was actually a protest, or a rally, I don't know which way you call it, and there was, because let's face it, in the West, they have definitely decided that Russia didn't have anything to do with the Second World War.
Is that right?
It's played down. And in France, they actually had quite a strong protest about people saying, hey, come on, Russia was involved in the Second World War as well, and Russia was behind the defeat of Nazi Germany.
And if Russia hadn't been involved, we wouldn't have had a chance of getting back into Western Europe.
Exactly.
That's almost like a deja vu, because wasn't it the same thing that happened when Russia wasn't invited to the Normandy?
And that was just sour grapes. They weren't invited to, I think, Auschwitz Memorial. But it's quite interesting. They did a survey of French people just in 1945, and the majorities by far said it was Russia behind the defeating Nazi Germany. Yeah. They just did a poll last year, and it was like 75-25 in 1945, think credited the Russians. No. It's flipped completely. People think it was America that... saved the world.
But that's what young people
believe. It just shows you, and then you can see, well, I wonder why they didn't invite them to D-Day, why didn't they invite them to Auschwitz?
Yeah. Well, I think the telltale signs about that, about the USA and their rah-rah-rah stuff, about, oh, we got into the war and we won it, is that they struggled to go through Italy, they struggled to go through France, and they got tied down and almost got slaughtered at the Battle of the Bulge in Ardennes. So while the Russians, after that initial, how the Germans invaded through Operation Barbarossa, and pushed them right back to Stalingrad, and that's where they held the line, and they just
But it's interesting. President Xi and Russia have had bilateral talks, etc. Mm-hmm. And one of the first agreements was about, and they're really titchy about it, about the Western's interpretation of the Second World War.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And you don't blame them. That was one of their first agreements, that to keep putting out the true history of the Second World War.
Well, they should do.
Then the Russians, you lose an estimated 20 million.
And so did the Chinese. The Chinese lost an awful lot of people too, which isn't publicised much at all.
No, that's all swept under the carpet.
Their losses were horrendous,
Nanking, for example.
I watched the parade.
That's more of a truer interpretation of the history.
But then earlier in the week they had some commemoration of Amsterdam, or they're looking at previous confrontations and war and how terrible.
Oh, thinking, and it was
that's good. Why are we still doing it? And why are we still killing each other?
I saw that. There was quite a big presence. It was about the Holocaust, from the Second World War. But there was an awful lot of people there who were also there about the current genocide going on in Russia, and saying, how can our government be saying this about one genocide?
And ignoring the other one,
looking at the other one,
That's
happening before our eyes. And we can't say in the Second World War there was still that we didn't know came up as the excuse. In the West and Germans, etc., we didn't know.
But they knew about it.
Well, I think they did. Mm. But no one can say they didn't know about this one because it's televised. Social media and everything else. So,
And this, when you're speaking about what's going on in Gaza, they, Zatayo have released a documentary. About the killing of the journalist
Shireen
Ablak. They reckon they've identified a soldier.
They have. That's what they said. That's what Democracy Now had kind of inferred. And they spoke to on Democracy. Then I spoke to her brother and niece and the Zateo
Mehdi Hassan,
and a person called Dion, and I forget his other name, he was the director of the movie who worked for the Wall Street Journal previously.
Yeah, because almost 3 years to the day he got killed.
But isn't it sad? There's been 200, 300 press media killed, shot, targeted, and a lot of it's targeting. Like, and what's to me is just unbelievable and atrocious and sad is these soldiers who have done these killings and these drone operators, etc. The impunity they feel that they can get away with it, they might get growled at or pretend growling at, and life goes on.
Yeah,
there was huge. Well, I watched that Democracy Now! Episode yesterday or last night, and there was a huge criticism of Biden over this matter. So she was a US citizen out of was it New Jersey?
Yeah. But you imagine if she hadn't had a US type passport as well, citizenship as well, how much noise would have made?
None.
It'd be. Oh yeah, that's what goes through our foreign affairs ministry here.
Yeah. You know. So but I say good that there's a documentary about it. It's not going to change. Not going to bring it back, of course.
No.
But it must must make them feel the heat when you suddenly get named as the killer of the who ordered the killing of the little girl Hein Rajab. Is it Rahaf? What's her name?
I know you're talking about.
Yeah. And you know, they've named whoever gave the order, etc. This puts a bit of pressure on them because, okay, there might be heroes in Israel. Then around the world, they'll be far more nervous if they decide to go anywhere.
They're regarded as cold-blooded killers by the most of the decent people in the Western world and the rest.
Well, and the world, not just the Western world anymore.
Just changing tack.
Yep.
New Pope.
Yeah, Leo the 14th.
His name is Robert Prevost.
American.
But interestingly, he holds citizenship of the USA and Peru. And I just sort of read his bio, and he's quite a mixture of different. He's got in his ethnicity. He's quite mixed.
He's a product of many.
Yeah, okay. Including French Creole for one, and you can just probably tell by the complexion.
Okay. Yeah.
But what that kind of you talked about Leo the 14th, and that's a kind of reminded me back going back to the last person who held the name Leo the 13th. He was the one of the his papacy was one of the longest at the end of the 19th century, start of the 20th century. But he was a critic of socialism, communism, and nihilism. However, he wrote this manifesto, and that upheld private property, but also the just wage, and that will lead us into the equity stuff, workers' rights and trade unions. His advocacy of social justice earned him the title of the Workers' Pope.
Oh, okay. That was in what century?
1920. His papacy went from 1878 to 1903.
He's quite a pope for a long time.
Yeah, he followed on from the previous pope who holds the longest papacy, which is Pius the Ninth, who we learned a lot about when we did high school history.
Well, anyway, it'll be interesting because, he's American, which might, he spent a lot of time as a missionary
in Peru,
course. Mm. But we'll see. We'll see what my judgment will be because of my bias, I guess, or my thing. Is if he makes any statements about Gaza or goes quiet, that'll decide it for me. How free thinking he is.
Yeah, he is a critic. We know that he's a critic of Couch Vance and Trump. We know that.
Yeah.
So, and I think he was handpicked basically by Francis to do a particular role within.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. And I'm expecting that everyone's expecting he'll just keep him going down the previous Pope's line.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
But the critics are out there. We know that his position on gender stuff and his position on sex issues, crimes within the Catholic Church.
Within the Church,
abuse, I should say. Yeah. So that's the that'll be also in the back of one's mind.
Yeah. I'm still miffed about all these so-called world leaders going to attend the Pope's funeral, and the Pope was obviously a critic of advocate for peace and the injustice of war and especially in Israel and against the Palestinians and Ukraine, etc. And they're all there going to saying he was a great man. If they do, they go back to their country and say we need to end these wars. No, they don't.
The hypocrite, basically, he Francis was, as we said before, a man of peace, a man of this and that and the other thing. And here's these people who came to his funeral, so-called guests, and they are basically warmongers or have basically.
And they have the power to put up to their people and go, look, we need to stop these wars. But, you know, that's it. We'll stop doing arming. We'll basically force a peace. But do they? No.
There's no money in peace.
No, that's the tragedy. You just wonder.
Moving on. Okay. What do you got there, Mick?
Well, you mentioned you've just referred to the pay equity.
Because pushed through
Parliament. Is it yesterday?
Yeah.
Or the day before?
Well,
been Thursday, I suppose.
Thursday, Friday. Yeah, and I just thought, I immediately thought of Ken Loach. I'm sure it's Ken Loach who made that movie called Women of Dagenham.
About
pay equity. It's based on a true story. They actually won their pay equity fight.
Yeah.
And when I heard about it, I thought, what? If I needed any more confirmation that we're going backwards, this is it. And as you said, Finn, when we're talking about some of this has come from women themselves.
And that's
the elites.
Well, that's what hurts me. That's what the most. You've got wealthy women who are, it's crazy. Politicians are wealthy. Women, professionals, etc. Nicola Willis, Buck Van Zelwin, whatever her name is, and etc.
we could think of other names.
They're all well paid. And here they are saying, well, actually, sorry, the clean woman from, sorry, you're not equal.
And you'll take a pay cut.
Next round, you'll have to accept what the deal is, and I just think and these women who are in the National Party, etc., and ACT and New Zealand First, who passed it through Parliament, etc., where's their thinking, hang on a minute, is this fair? So they've just towed the party line. So it's a class war. It's not even about feminism, etc. It's about class, wealthy people putting it on to poor people.
Well, they say that the amendments remove rights previously recognised by Parliament and retrospectively scuttle existing legal claims. Worse, they were rushed through under urgency without the unions and other people affected being heard in a select committee and the arguments assessed. But these are not ordinary times, says Mr. Hooton. He says, some suggest that the Ardern government's well-intentioned changes 5 years ago risk costing taxpayers up to $17 billion over the next 4 years.
Well, the good news is we can now expect women MPs in the National Party and ACT and New Zealand First to take a 30% pay cut.
If you carry their argument through.
That would be the noble right thing to do. If you believe that the cleaning woman shouldn't get as paid much as someone else, but you would say, I don't deserve as much as my
these elite
male
women
colleague.
And noble. That's an oxymoron. The two don't go together.
No, that's true.
I suggested on a Facebook comment that they could drag, this is all about pay equity, pay difference between the genders.
Yeah.
Mm. Why don't they drag the men's one down?
Yeah, exactly. Because I've always held the belief that if you've got two people who've got the same sort of qualifications, same experience, et cetera, and doing exactly the same job, they should be paid exactly the same.
Regardless of gender, that's the position I've always held.
If you can do the job, you get paid the same as your male colleague, or vice versa.
So why haven't these well-paid women who have agreed to this in Parliament
walked out in protest?
Why haven't they walked out?
Yeah, no class conscience.
It's class.
They're part of the problem. Yeah. It's a class.
It's privilege.
No, as I say, it's no class conscience.
And it's like you said it before, Craig. It's about you know, you got to tighten your belt for the many, but not for the few.
Oh, yeah, that's your line.
Hume says, as we pay equity, if we weren't now $170 billion behind what was planned, Willis would never think about touching a scheme that has helped build a savings culture in New Zealand. Now with over $100 billion, this, I presume you mean KiwiSaver. But this is about the money.
Yeah.
Directing the money where it's most needed.
But the good news is that people have come out in the streets for it, that'll only build, I think.
Well, one would hope.
Yeah, no, and as I say, so the National Party have got a conference in Rotorua, so hopefully they've organised over there to give them a bit of a tickle on their way in and out of the private conference, et cetera.
Yeah, the government says that the current system's cost has exploded.
I don't understand. The cost has exploded because Mary, who works, was getting $23 an hour, should only be paid $21 an hour.
Well, I think he's arguing on the fact that. Treasury began formally warning in 2006 about the looming fiscal challenges of this pay equity after 2030. They expected future governments would follow the responsible fiscal management of the Bulger-Shipley government and Clark governments maintaining surpluses. So this is about having reserves.
Well,
how many billion are they going to spend on the military defending?
There's no mention of that.
How many billion do they give to landlords?
No mention of tax reform,
welfare tax reform at all.
So that's just blaming the peasant for their management.
So the Treasury was scared about cost overruns and stuff like that. The thing blowing up. Well, how much are these rich types? How much do their bank balances look like?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they say, oh, we've got to do it because, you know, things are tough, da-da-da. Haven't been too tough for those up top, I assure you.
Like hell, you know.
You mentioned the key English and Ardern Hipkins legacy is that we're nearly 40% of GDP or more than $170 billion behind where they would like the reserve to be, you know, money.
Yeah.
And they can have a go at Winston Peters, Helen Clark and Sir Michael Cullen, who planned this back in 2006.
There's a comment that came out from the and it was to do with Helen Clark, and she was an opponent of pay equity, and there's a comment that was mentioned over my dead body.
She was an opponent of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. I didn't realise that.
The problem, and it's also been exacerbated by the explosion in baby boomers who are now going to retire.
Yeah.
Health costs are going to. Spiral.
This is going back to the dark ages.
This goes back to why we got rid of the Norman Kirk scheme.
That
was a scheme for that rainy day when you talked about baby boomers getting old, having more health issues. And what did we do?
But isn't it? It's interesting because it's still got this. You know, if you're wealthy, you decide if you spend your money or not. You give me $100, I can put it in my bank or I can spend it. You're poor, the people they are picking on with this, the woman they're potentially picking on with this, they, you know, and this won't happen. In the higher government offices, et cetera, I imagine they won't get threatened with pay differences. This will happen right down the lower class.
Yeah, of course.
The unskilled and the lower.
And the same people are bringing this about are still putting their hand out.
They will still get exactly the same amount of money.
Subsidies because of their job or whatever. And they've got more money than they know what to do with anyway. But still got a hand out.
But the person who's poor has to spend everything they have.
The other one that is also connected to it is the people who make up the low paid.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ethnicity. Maori and Pacifica. They're always at the...
And maybe migrants coming in.
They're always at, to quote a crude term, at the arse end of everything.
So a retrograde step. And you notice the other thing, just to slightly twitch it, they also passed under urgency a law about that if you're building a road or something and you move a kiwi or a toad or a native frog, etc., that it's legal, if there is a death, it's legal to do it. The courts ruled in favour, and I haven't in favour
so
of...
So if a frog or a kiwi gets inadvertently killed,
that's okay. There's no...
no comeback.
No comeback. Well, and the courts had ruled in favour of the kiwi and the frog and everything else. And they passed this under urgency as well that, no, there wouldn't be a comeback. Well, so that's a... You know, they haven't just had a go at poor woman. They've had a go at the environmentalists
as
well.
So that's direct interference from the executive to the judicial.
Yeah, and that's it. The judiciary made that decision...
It was just supposed to be separate.
Exactly, and they've overruled it. That's dangerous.
Well, yeah.
Their whole use of under urgency.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Well, it can lead to fascism.
Well, the previous...
Bypassing democracies.
The previous Ardern/Hipkin government used under urgency for certain things. The COVID stuff, the floods that happened under Gabriel.
You can understand that.
The state of emergency stuff.
Yeah.
Their use of under urgency is to basically scuttle anything that is like the previous government or something that would bring something to do with a social good.
And
undermine democracy.
And do that as well.
Yeah.
It's been misused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I say, and you're ignoring the principles of democracy and the right to, you know, consultation and everything else.
But they never wanted democracy.
No, they never have.
Well, I say, only 18% of the world has real democracy. It's pretty scary.
It's been whittled down.
Absolutely. And they go, say, the West slings off at Russia and China. There's nothing pretty about American democracy or the UK democracy or Canada's democracy or even Australia's democracy, you know?
I see concerns over Stanford's emails.
Yeah, what's that about?
She said, Hipkin says there's no need for a minister to use her personal account. It says Senior Minister Erica Stanford sent official briefings to her personal email account, an action discouraged by Parliament's cabinet manual. Stanford says she forwarded the email so she could print them off at home or electoral office, often while being away from Wellington for work. Labour says there's absolutely no justification as Parliament technology has dramatically improved in recent years and was now all fully mobile. So there's spurious claims as to why she... not state secrets, but official government.
Personal
email.
It was the same rationale that Claire Curran was hung up to dry. And she was told and warned, and she lost her job. And when this was revealed, it was these so-called decent people of the National Party.
Oh, people of good character.
Good character, yes. who were putting the boot in and saying that no, she shouldn't be doing that, and she should be sacked.
So it's basically do as I say.
I think there was also some of the content that there was an argument what the content of some of the emails was as well.
For her, there was
of the Curran lady.
Hers would be regarded as quite sensitive stuff.
Our cabinet ministers, there's money in it, you know. Decisions about all sorts of stuff.
They could fall into the wrong head. Oh, somebody could be a visitor at home and may have other you know business interests. That even happened. You know how that story about Stuart Nash and why he was fired.
That's right.
So she has no defence for what she's done.
Will
she be ousted?
No.
Well, she probably doesn't deserve to be ousted, but she should be admonished.
Well, if you're going to apply it to one person, it should be applied.
Yeah. If it was a Māori person.
If they put in the boot into the person you just referred to.
Claire Curran,
same should apply to her.
Claire Curran lost her.
In the press.
Claire Curran lost her portfolios. Then was out of Parliament.
There was a bit more to it, but
But it's in the same. It's in the same realm.
It should be level playing field, and regardless of whoever does it, you're nicked.
It's what you said, Mick, before. It's a parliamentary manual that discourages that kind of behaviour.
Yeah.
So the parliamentary manual applies to everybody.
Well, it's a bit like Gerry Brownlee pushing in the queue. Jumping to get on the airplane that time.
Self entitled.
And
I think
they just have to play by the rules, and there should be some sort of consequences, of course.
Stanford's just one of those self entitled types.
Yeah.
who sold this bribe. I think it's an election bribe about paying for teachers' registrations. And I made that comment to my daughter because she's going through that teacher training stuff. And she kind of said, yeah, it sounds like it.
It's a temptation, all right.
Hamilton City Council is not keen on flat rate for public transport. They're talking about people in Hamilton's cheaper properties will be hit in the pocket if a change to transport rate goes ahead. Waikato Regional Council will soon be collecting public transport rates for the whole region and has proposed that Hamilton move to a flat rate of $278.88 per household instead of calculating the contribution based on the value of the house. So they're going from a rate base to a flat rate.
Okay.
And of course the same people are going to get
hammered.
Yeah, and people who don't use it go,
I don't use it.
Yeah.
Very complicated, right?
Yeah.
Apparently Mayor Paul Sargate said she was disappointed they had to make a submission regarding the proposal rather than discussing the matter in an open and collaborative way. Well, that's wishful thinking, eh?
Yeah.
Collaborative. Watch this space, eh? Because... they're going to have a go at how they fund the public transport.
And it goes right up to...
And it goes back.
And at the moment, us pensioners are enjoying quite free travel.
Free travel.
Yeah, within the city and out of the town as well.
Well, and as you get older, you should be encouraged not to use your car and all that. You know, you're not as... You know, so, you know...
Yeah, but when it comes to... anything to do with public transport in the city, it is usually the people who don't use it.
Yeah,
grizzle the most.
But what would happen if we went down this road of pulling back on public transport, allowing the private car owner to have complete and utter rule over the whole...
It's a bit like bicycling, in my opinion. Cyclists on footpaths, you know, starts off, we can share, and then I got a serve the other day because I was in the way of a cyclist on the footpath.
So you've got right away.
I gave it back to them reasonably unpolitely.
Really?
Not like me.
So it's a bit. So it's saying, well, what happens when if you do away with public transport, rely totally on the private stuff, get congestion? What happens then?
Well, it's not even that.
And then you're going to end up with certain segments of society who won't be able to afford it, and they'll be forced to walk everywhere they go.
Or medically, as you get older, you mightn't be able to drive, etc.
What happens if your circumstances change? Yeah. You can't drive a car and you've got to use transport. I voted against public transport.
Yeah. And do we go to hospitals and go, if it's your fault, we won't treat you? No, we treat everyone. And that's how we should. It should be so. Public transport is there to serve. And, okay, sure, you think, there's not many on the bus today, but it's still there. It is available. It's a public good, public service.
But you just allude, I know you're sort of joking about going to hospital and being treated on the basis of guilt of perpetrating the wound yourself. That's going to creep in.
Well, that's the danger. You creep it in through the sides.
Well, the demand is going to go up, so they're going to find any reason to not trick, no?
Or pay, you have to pay for it.
So it's just eroding the public good. That's the danger of, the buses, I don't use it, so it's not me. It's like that old saying, first they came for whoever, and then they came for the next lot, and then they came for the next lot, and then there was no one there to defend me.
We know that's from Nazi Germany.
But things just seem to be going, reaffirms my belief that things are going backward.
Very quickly.
Well, we were talking about it before, you know, this under urgency. Everything suddenly, you know.
Well, it's very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's misused, It's abuse of power,
Public good. It's, what are we doing this for? And sure, there needs to be sort of oversight on it, and it does have to be paid for. But
that's going against the Seymour belief.
But should you give a tax cut, or should you actually just provide a service?
Well, these people think the first tax cut.
Yeah, because they don't need to use the public service.
Or rate reduction, or something like that.
And the other one I got was Joint Hamilton Waikato Water Services backed. Shared Hamilton City Waikato District Water Services are backed by 3/4 of submitters of the City Council, 221 formal submissions on the prospects of two councils forming a joint water services council-controlled organisation, otherwise known as a CCO. But that echoes back to, we could have done this with the Three Waters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, we couldn't have, because there was going to be a Māori person at the table.
The CCO would take over the management of drinking and wastewater services from 26 to 27. Next year and the year after.
I have fears in there anyway.
When things privatisation,
and we go down the same slippery road that Britain has gone down.
Well, they reckon it won't, but it will definitely go to meters.
If they say that, have you been ingenuous or they're lying through their teeth?
Well, yeah,
either or.
Yes. Because if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
They'll always say that to,
of course,
ameliate.
Yeah. Wasn't that about the power companies? Your power won't go up. Wasn't that about the telephone? Your telephone won't go up. Wasn't that
private? Private enterprise. We'll be responsible.
Yeah, we've heard it before.
And I see that overseas that Trump's upset with the U.S. film industry is having a hard time, and so he's talking about imposing tariffs on overseas filmmakers, 100%, which includes New Zealand. My first one I heard is, well, perhaps the reason the American film industry may be struggling is because they make rubbish movies.
And they treat the people who like the lower paid people like with contempt.
Yeah,
that sort of stuff. Didn't you hear about the strike?
Well, I think the world's, not all the world, but there's, maybe the young ones still like going to see a hero go off and they blow up people and kill people.
But it seems to be an awful lot of the same thing, though.
You go in and you watch the trailer and you know basically what the movie is.
Yeah.
They've
run out of ideas, so it's only a rehashing.
Occasionally they put out a good movie, and there are,
they can be done cheaper overseas than in America. That's why they've gone overseas.
Yeah.
He's got the ump about it.
Yeah, he said one of his favourite movies was Citizen Kane, which I thought, that's quite surprising, because I thought it was quite an intelligent movie. I thought he'd be something like Toy Story or something like that.
I think he wants a movie about himself. Speaking, going back to the Pope, isn't it? He put out this, and it was a joke, of course, but puts out this picture, done up AI picture of him being in the papal gown, etc. And of course, it caused a furore,
I called it something different. I just changed the word Pope to something else.
but as I say, he gets a reaction, and he's one of these, Trump, it's like the trade deal, he's just got the bits to bend over. He throws it out there and basically says, oh, we'll see what sort of reaction I get. And then goes from there. He certainly lit up the world, and it's sort of I think I have a little tickle at the popeship and see what happens.
He seems he's not very popular according to some polls.
He's now blaming
a downturn on their economy on the previous administration.
Yeah.
But then when he was in before, he was claiming credit for the upturn in the economic.
So he
flips backwards and forwards all over the place.
Do you know a person called Lawrence O'Donnell? He is on that
news presenter.
Yeah, probably does an evening show on the same platform.
Quite spoken chat.
It's on the same. It's on that
MSNBC.
That Rachel Maddow is on the same platform.
Yeah,
and the one that you should listen to is one that's about about Trump's comment, I don't know.
Okay.
if you listen to Lawrence O'Donnell in that particular YouTube presentation,
he even claimed the fact that the new Pope is American as an honour.
Yeah.
Mm. As in him.
Yeah.
Not honour. No.
But that happens a lot. We still have this, instead of saying, oh, he's a great human being or he's done something great, it's like, we had the scrap over Russell Crowe, whether he was New Zealand or Australia, all that sort of...
This is nonsense.
He's
a Pope. He's got current Pope Robert Prevost, citizen of two countries, mixed heritage.
Yeah. Born in America. So anyway.
Yeah, so that's me anyway. So you got anything there, Fred?
Yeah, I think
you go, Craig.
No, I didn't actually bring anything, to be frank. I talked about the Leo the 13th being the workers' pope.
Mm. Well, you've got some homework. You've got to go home and find out whether I'm right about the left wing if it comes from the French. What have I got? I've got a little bit. Should I go or not?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, the big news really in the South Pacific really was the Australian elections last week. You know, they were just coming into it. And I think we all thought that maybe Albanese would get in, but they basically got a landslide.
Old Dutton got booted into touch, literally.
Well, yes.
Well, they got Labor got 91 seats. And this is the irony or something that this way had a little dig at Australia in their election democracy. They're still counting. Right, because they have this preferential voting, it's been a week, right? They've only up to 82.9% of the votes that they've counted because they have all this, you list all your MPs, and it's very democratic, they say, but they've only counted 82.9% of the votes so far, and I think it's even less for the Senate. They've counted even less for the Senate.
Well, perhaps they should adopt the New Zealand version of MMP. It might be speed up the process.
Well, yeah, because it throws it all up. First Nation is still in the running to pick up quite a few seats.
On
preferential votes. Yeah. You know, so...
Well, they're following a trend because Germany's only just decided who's going to be government.
Chancellor Metz has finally got there. So I'll just run through a few things, if I may. So there was a 2.7% swing to Labor over there, the Australian Labor Party. There was a 3.5% swing against the National Lips. And that's what I found. The irony is Labor is ending up, picked up so far, 91 seats against the Libs' 40 seats.
Yeah.
And yet the Labor got 35% of the votes and the Coalition, which is the National Libs, got 32%. And look at the difference in seats, and that's why I go back to that. The democracy still doesn't make sense.
Yeah, have you? Did you?
That's almost first past the post sort of stuff.
Yeah. If you look at the map of Australia and the electoral setup, it looks largely bloody blue. But the Labor Party concentrations are in those major cities of Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, and Perth.
And
all of Tasmania.
So that's the irony. So the Labor got 35% of the votes. They got 5 million votes and they got 91 seats. It's still counting, of course, because the Coalition got 32% of the vote, 4.5 million, and got 40 seats. So they very close, and it was like the Brits in the UK with their elections.
They go on
about the landslide for Labor, and they got less than what Corbyn got.
This is the first time a Labor government's been re-elected
in Australia.
In something like 20 years.
Bob Hawke. So going back to the Greens in Australia, the Greens got 11.8% of the vote for Parliament and didn't get any seats. And there was a 1.6% swing against them.
Who's this you're talking about?
The Greens.
Greens, right.
The Greens. So they've lost all their seats. Today.
On election day, we knew that they held one.
No, they haven't.
But they lost it.
Is that
gone? Because of the preferential voting system, of course. Yeah. One Nation got 6.3% of the vote.
What about the independents, the socialist equality?
We'll get to that.
So One Nation, so they've just got under a million votes.
She's still around.
One Nation, yeah.
Toothless old dog.
The independents, or they call them the others, got 13% of the vote overall, which is about 1.9 million. And they got picked up 10 seats. But it just shows you the Greens and the independents, you know, it's still very all over the place about the voting system. And
seems very cumbersome.
Well, it's slow. And then, of course, so the Senate. It was also up for grab, and they're a bit like America. They do that. They have a Senate, and there's 76 seats. 40 seats are up for grab each election, so they don't It's a 6-year term, like American Senate.
They kind of overlap, sort of.
Yeah, but also protects, you know, it sort of protects the status quo and all.
One hopes, but on the current political climate, I don't think I could put much confidence in that.
So you have you have 12 senators from each of the 6 states, 2 each from the 2 territories, and the 2 territories are the Northern Territories and ACT, the Australian, Canberra, and just as a side note, I don't know if you guys remember, but David Pocock, he was a Wallaby. A very well-spoken guy. And he just cleaned up. He is a senator in ACT, and he doesn't need a recount or anything. He's that popular.
Is he a Labor man?
Independent. But he was, as I say, I always remember when I was younger and watching him play footy and that, whenever they interviewed him, he just spoke so well.
And he was articulate for a...
He's obviously well-liked, so he got there. So that's impressive. But say the same as the Senate, is they've only got 75% counted. And that's the complexity of all this. Well, if you don't, your first preference is Labor, and then it's going to be this, and that's how One Nation sneaks in.
Well, how long does it take us to get a result when we have our elections? Not that long, is it?
Not that long, unless we have recounts, but usually...
usually within a couple of weeks, surely. Special votes from overseas, it's normally done and dusted, isn't it?
It's very quick. So this is it. But so depending on that, One Nation... One Nation hasn't got any seats in the Senate yet, but it could end up with some, in the Parliament. But
still a racist country.
It has got a seat in the Senate, so that's interesting. So
I know which Senate should be.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So in the Senate, Labor's got, looking like at present, they've got 28 seats. The Libs National have 26 seats in the Senate, and the Greens have 11. And this is what's interesting, because if you watch Sky News over and thing, the Greens are terrible. It's very pro-American, very anti-Green, etc. Yeah. And the Greens didn't get any seats in the parliamentary elections, but they still held up their votes in the Senate elections. So they've still got the balance of power. So unless things change... Labor, unless it wants to deal with all the others, can basically do, if it does deals with the Greens in the Senate, they'll do it. So that's the irony. Greens got hammered in the, didn't get any seats at all, lost their leader, lost their job, lost their seat in Melbourne or wherever he was, Bryant, I think his name was, Bryant. But as I say, they still vote held up in the Senate.
Aren't the Australian Greens also quite militaristic?
They are very progressive. Which is what you'd expect a Green Party to be.
Aggressive. I mean, I think they're pro-military spending.
No, you
think it's Germany, aren't
they? Someone made a comment that the Greens in Australia follow the same path as the Greens in Germany.
Not that I know of, Mick.
For promoting increasing military spending. And
they did get a hammering about delaying things, because they would use that in the Senate, etc. They tended to hold up legislation, etc., arguing from a Green perspective, perspective. But I just thought, if you got it from our media, you think, the Greens got a hammering in Australia. Well, they seat-wise, but they still, their vote was only, what was their vote down? Their vote was down 1.67% swing against them. That's not much.
It's just because it's
first past the post and preferential voting, they didn't get any seats.
Yeah.
Whereas if that had been our system, MMP, you get 11% of the vote,
you get
the proportional seats.
Yeah.
Same for One Nation, you get 6%, they would get it, whether you don't like them or not. But that to me is fair democracy. If you can get,
a big gap for proportional,
So that was that on the Australian one. So it watched the space. So
Singapore had elections too.
I think the same old, wasn't it?
The incumbent took that, and he's quite a capable. Capable party.
Yeah, but they've been losing support over the years, but not enough to be ousted at a point.
I think the comment basically about Australia and about Canada and about that, the Trump effect. Has certainly rattled people, and when you're rattled, you tend to vote for the devil.
For all these lunatics to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and I think Australians have gone, okay, Dutton wasn't popular anyway, and Dutton lost to Seton Dixon up in Queensland. But at the end of the day, when things are all up in the air, and we see it here, if things are all over the place, or there's people tend to vote, even if they don't particularly like them, they vote for the devil in it. And Albanese, that they know what the Labor Party stands for, and it's a very sort of moderate Labor Party, yeah. You know.
So, what was that that terminology? Blue Labor.
Yeah. Tories in red suits.
I think Albanese, they're a bit better than the Tories, and the Blue Labor in the UK. But Albanese is. As I say, that's pretty amazing to get re-voted in, you know. But as I say, Dutton was the wrong candidate, too brutal, too brutish. There's an awful lot of ex-Kiwis live in Australia who wouldn't have liked the old 501 deportation scheme.
He was the author of that.
Yeah, and they would, and also say the Trump effect, and then the nuclear power. There was things, so they didn't do well.
It's interesting that. Albanese was talking about nuclear power energy. Australia doesn't have any nuclear power stations.
No.
It's going to cost them billions to even put that into
get practice. There, yeah.
But they have the uranium, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, Arnhem Land.
And plus they've got plenty of room for solar power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I mean. You'd think they'd just go to that.
And it's cheaper.
Cheaper.
And they've got the space, you know, and they've got big solar power units, so, you know.
Take a leave out of China.
But anyway, we'll see what happens. So I thought that was interesting about Australia. How that will affect. But what the other thing was interesting, which I hope the National Party are listening over in Rotorua at their conference, is their membership in the Liberals and the National Party in Australia. They were full of old people. Which is a surprise, you know.
Really?
What
we want is a Spanish influenza type thing.
Yeah. and look at the same thing here with the Nats and that. They might have some young, ambitious wannabes younger, but they're not.
It's their ideology that worries me.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
So that's that one. The other couple of things I've got is. The North Koreans, and this was at the Victory Parade in Moscow last night, Putin spent a bit of time, North Koreans had some soldiers there. Their leadership, of course. And he gave, spent some time with them and gave one of them a hug and all that, because North Koreans have lost some troops fighting Russian-Ukrainian war. That was interesting. But what's they've just started, this is back in North Korea, over the Tumen River, and that's between Russia. There's a Russia and North Korea share a very, very narrow strip of a border, which is divided by a river. And there is a rail link. And if you want to go from North Korea to Russia, you can go by rail. They've just started building a road bridge.
Okay.
And that's quite interesting. And that deal was. They've just turned the first, turned the first piece of dirt. Turned the sod or whatever, and that's expected to be up and running by 2026. So that's interesting, because North Korea struggles with allies, I guess.
They have a potential like that,
Although
they've got one big buddy on their borders, China.
Yeah, well, they've got China, China's sort of an ally as well. Mm-hmm. But that's just interesting that they've... going to make it more accessible. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And so what else? And the other thing was, I just saw a little glimpse of it from, it came from Mehdi Hassan and from Zetio. I think someone was interviewing at a program, and I might be wrong, I see so much on social media. Time on social media in America each week, this is the average for people. Guess how much time?
Over
18 hours.
Ooh.
Yeah,
18
hours.
Jeez. Per capita, one person spends 18 hours.
Average. Yeah, a week.
A week.
Yeah, a week.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, but when you think of all the children and we're the old people and all that, that's still, there's an awful lot of people pumping out hours. And then I was thinking, oh, that's a lot. But then I was thinking about myself. This morning, I I looked at the BBC. I looked at France 24. Did I look at any American news? No, that was Tom. and then I looked at Global Times in China. Yeah. I looked at, didn't look at Russian news, but I looked at something about another Chinese program.
Yep.
And then I found I'd spend a couple of hours reading the various papers, etc., what's going on. Well, you multiply that by seven, that's 14 hours, and that's not what I have. I usually have a look at night time or watch something or listen to a podcast or something.
It does seem excessive to me.
A couple of hours a day. Yeah.
You just flick through what I'm doing now. You flick through.
Yeah.
And you'll look and you'll say, I'll watch that. I'll read that article.
Yeah.
And so on and so on and so on.
Yeah. It's easy to get caught up in.
That's why I don't do social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I do is I look at looking at stuff. I like to pick up political or historical article off the YouTube.
Yeah.
It's always quite worth.
Well, that's where I got the thing from the French about the left wing, right wing.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And it's just that everybody will have an interest, or some of it's more not so nefarious like other people. But
but when you take out the children and the old people, there must be an awful lot of people doing 30 or 40 hours a week, you know?
There's money.
Yeah.
Damn.
So you can see why social media has had such a big impact and the dangers of it. And there are advantages, but there was also hasn't dangers.
Worked out the way they first thought it was going to work out. There's going to be a democracy, and
the opposite has probably helped fascism more than democracy.
Yeah, because this is what I was looking for of stuff, and it goes back to mixed articles about pay equity.
Yeah,
and there's a writer to stuff called Verity Johnson.
Yeah.
And she's an Auckland-based writer and business person.
Yeah.
And she wrote this about it. I'll just quote her. There's a couple of three paragraphs here. I can't work out which part of this week's drive-by political shooting was the most horrifying. Was it the fact that at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, Van Velden announced a plan to make it a hell of a lot harder for working women, often in the lowest paid jobs, to use their democratic rights to get fair, equal pay? Mm-hmm. Was it the fact that, in the words of Seymour, Van Velden is single-handedly saving the budget, and yet no one asked us normal people whether we actually wanted to pay for budget cuts by punching the poorest, most vulnerable parts of our workforce in the face?
Yeah.
That's exactly what. I wouldn't have expected from somebody like her.
But she's
a good honour to have some empathy. And there will be many women who are professionals, etc., who go, this is absolutely not right.
And there's been a lot, according to reporters through Facebook. There's been a lot of men who have commented on the negative ramifications of this.
But I say I don't think it's so much a gender thing. It's a gender class thing. In the end, it's class driven. It's privilege driven.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. Okay. So this is Free Left Turn and signing off.
Equal pay for women.
Equal pay.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.